Steve Bucci of the Heritage Foundation contributing to Heritage's brand new release of the 2015 Index of U.S. Military Strength. Steve's portion is titled The Importance of Special Operations Forces Today and Going Forward. Steve, there is a lot of terrific material contained herein, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com. Congratulations to you and your team. You write about five truths about special operations forces. Before we get into each of the five, tell me why you thought it was necessary to lay them out and the importance that they have as decision makers think about the future of the special forces. Thanks for coming on, Steve.
Well, thanks for having me, Francis. This article is one of a bunch of really good ones in this document, and we're really proud of it. And I'm particularly proud because, well, most of the people who wrote it all work for me. So it's kind of gratifying to see something produced this way. Reference the soft truths. I mean, I can't take credit for those five. They are doctrinal, if you will, tenets of U.S. Special Operations Command and the entire U.S. Special Operations community. They were developed a few years ago, and they really are an unbelievably good teaching tool to help our folks understand what their missions are all about, really, but also to help decision makers understand how to utilize and hopefully how not to misutilize these very precious assets.
I mean, no disrespect at all to you and your colleagues in the special operations community when I say that these are not particularly deep and they're not intellectually ponderous. Truth one, humans are more important than hardware. Number two, quality's better than quantity. Number three, soft can't be mass produced. Competence soft can't be created after emergencies occur is truth four. And truth five is most special operations require non-soft assistance. Essentially, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, we work in a team environment. They're not brain surgery. And so I wonder if they're maybe so self-evident that it is necessary to reiterate them from time to time.
It, very much so. I mean, these are things that once you read them, you go, oh, yeah, of course. But we found, you know, SOF is such an attractive tool to use in the military kit bag. They're small footprint, they're professional, they're highly skilled. You know, they get things done. Sometimes nobody knows they've really done it. They're really useful in the hands of the decision makers as a tool. The problem is if you don't understand these five truths, you can misuse them quite easily and in some cases squander them and worse, get them all killed. So these things are really critical. The first one, you know, Americans tend to be hardware-centric. We like gizmos and gadgets, and trust me, in special operations, we got a ton of them. But the people are really the difference. That's really what is what's special about the special operations forces, not all the cool kit that we carry around with us.
The second one, quality is better than quantity, is another one that I think is self-evident. And it's something, too, that I think the average American citizen is aware of. Earlier in this article, you listed the various places that special operations live in the military. And, you know, we think about U.S. Army Special Forces, SEALs, Rangers, of which you were one, and the others, and they're detailed in this piece as linked at federalnewsradio.com. I mean, the average citizen walking down the street would say, yes, the people that are involved in those units are very special, very high-level Americans.
Well, see, when you connect the two and three, they work together. The idea that quality is better than quantity is you don't want to try to say, well, these guys are great. We need lots and lots of them. Let's just make a whole bunch more. And in number three, where it says soft cannot be mass-produced, it takes a lot of recruiting, a lot of screening, a heck of a lot of training, and frankly, time. And some of these guys, you know, the special forces guys that I used to lead, some of them are a little older. They're not 18-year-olds. So those two together, number two and three, are there to emphasize the fact that you want to pick the right people, you want to get them the right training with the right attitudes. It's better to have 10 of those than have 100 other folks who are less qualified and less skillful, and you can't really make a whole bunch of them real fast.
competent special operations forces can't be created after emergencies occur is the fourth one. We might have been a little guilty of that after 9/11, trying to decide, oh, we need a whole bunch more people to go do these jobs.
Well, and what we ended up doing was using the guys and gals that we had, working them really hard and really often, and then trying to expand some of it. Now, we did some interesting things. You know, when guys got wounded, rather than saying, sorry, we don't need you anymore, you know, leave the military, we realized we could use them in the training base. So, you know, some of our instructors at the Special Forces School at Fort Bragg, you know, are guys wearing prosthetic arms and legs. A ton of credibility for those people coming in for training, and they're still really phenomenal trainers. So we got creative, but the key there is that, you know, when something really bad happens, you suddenly can't look around and go, gosh, we need a lot more of these guys. Let's go create some. It's too late at that point. You never get the experiential base that you need to make these guys really as effective as they can be.
And Truth 5 actually connects to this list that you have of key insights into special forces. And here's the connection that I saw. Truth 5 is most special operations require non-SOF assistance. The first bullet in your list of key insights is SOF are precious assets that take time, effort, and investment to develop. Time, effort, and investment are all three things that can't only come from within special forces. They have to come, especially the investment has to come from outside, and in particular has to come from Congress, who's willing to give the military the money to develop these men and women appropriately.
Yeah, very definitely. You know, if you give money to SOF, you've got to take it from somewhere else. And so you have to make the risk-based decision on what assets you want to spend the money on, and not do it helter-skelter or without any really good ideas. Now, the second one I particularly like, because it's one where in military history we've seen SOF get hurt, is they're really not suitable for, you know, like taking cities. I say big scale tasks. You know, SOF can do a lot of stuff, but they cannot do everything. And even though they may be super soldiers, they're still human beings, and they die just as easily as regular troops if you put them in the wrong situation. A classic example is you're not going to use a special operations unit to fight enemy tanks. They can do it, and they'll do a heck of a job, and they'll take some of those tanks with them, but they'll lose in the end. So you want to use them appropriately and not think that they can do just about anything in the world.
What do you want us to take away from the work that you and your colleagues have done on Special Operations Forces in this piece, Steve?
The key here is that they are a really great enabling asset for the American military and for the American policymakers. If they're used appropriately and for the right missions, great things can be done. They are not all we need. And, you know, so people think, well, just we get rid of all these tanks and aircraft carriers and just build a bunch of special ops guys. That's the wrong answer. We need all those conventional guys. That's where the soft forces go to get their recruits. And there are a lot of tasks where you don't, you know, the SOF is just the wrong unit to use. So use these guys, use them effectively, but use them correctly in the context of the bigger military toolkit, and America will be well served.
I mentioned the high level of awareness that special operations forces of various kinds have in the United States right now. Do you worry that that's transitional, or that that's on a pendulum swing, and there could come a time when people are not as aware or do not treat the special operations forces as such a commodity as people seem to now, not just in the general population, but especially on the Hill?
You know, we tend to describe ourselves generically as the quiet professionals. We actually don't mind doing our job and not getting a lot of attention, as long as, you know, the guys get the assets that they need, the equipment they need, the training they need to maintain their skills. So I don't think anybody would mind a little lower profile than what we have now. As long as the leadership recognizes the utility of the forces and takes the time to understand how to use them. If we do that, I think we'll be okay. I don't think soft is going to go anywhere in the immediate future. They're just too useful and too much of an asset for the nation.
And I agree with you on all of those points. My fear is that just through the cyclical nature of the attention span of the average member of Congress or the average American citizen, that they'll kind of recede into the background as some of the events that have brought their profiles more into people's awarenesses will recede.
It does happen. You know, they did great things in Vietnam. After Vietnam, they almost went away. And then they came back again. And but I think since the first Gulf War forward, SOF has done such a fantastic job with such a difficult array of missions, sensitive missions, and done them just phenomenally. I think their stock will stay pretty high for the foreseeable future.
I congratulate you and your team on this excellent work, and I'm grateful for you to come on and talk about it with me today, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Francis.